and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Well, it's been a sad old week, really, isn't it?
It has, yeah.
We lost the actor Paul Ritter.
Yeah, that was really upsetting. I didn't know he was unwell.
No. The dad from Friday Night Dinner, and I watched an episode of it on the evening I found out as a little tribute to the man.
So did I.
And then we lost Prince Philip, of course, age 99.
Yeah, it's certainly a good old innings.
It is, isn't it? I'm slightly gutted he didn't make it to the 100. I was sort of, when he wasn't well a few weeks ago, I was really winning him on. I was thinking, come on, you've got to get to the 100. Because he was only literally 2 months off of it, 8 weeks.
No, I mean, that's a bit of a shame, just for my sort of love of round numbers.
Yeah.
I'm a bit annoyed he didn't get there as well. And what I'm about to say, I don't mean this to be disrespectful in any way at all. God love him, but is it safe to turn the radio on yet? Or are they still talking about it?
Well, it's big news, Ben.
I know it's big, but there's not really much more to report after the initial breaking news bit. Yet there seems to be never-ending, just ceaseless coverage of this particular event, and I don't want to sound disrespectful, but I'm a little bit done with it now.
Are you?
In the politest way possible.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, I've been following little bits and pieces. There's lots of, my phone is probably going off at least twice a day with a new bit of information about the family, you know, a new tribute from Harry or Wills or whatever. So it's always that to keep your eye on, and the details for the funeral, that sort of thing. Right, so did you not watch any of the kind of tribute kind of stuff, the programs that were already had been put together for when the time came?
No, I didn't really. After I got the breaking news, I listened to a bit of it, and then a few hours later I switched on the radio and they were still going. Then the next day they were still going, and like you say, I'm all for, you know, hearing the tributes roll in from the important people, but yeah, you know, drop that in throughout the day, you know, with other news, other content. It just got a bit full on, and I think even the BBC had possibly over 100,000 complaints,
yeah,
about the ceaseless, just never-ending flow of Prince Philip news.
Well, there's far more people out there than I thought who had stones instead of hearts. I mean, honestly, it's...
I mean him no ill will at all, but just, you know, move on with the news now, eh?
I was a little bit concerned about my own powers.
Your own powers?
Yeah, because last week on the podcast, I made a little joke about Prince Philip going on and on.
Mm.
And then...
I believe you spoke of his longevity.
I did, yeah. And then actually there was a little bit that I cut out of the main podcast,
which nobody besides me must ever hear.
No, I know. But all I'll say is that I worry about the power, because let me just tell you this, right? Because I've been thinking a lot about this, because I know our old mate John got in touch to say, be careful of your powers, just based on what I left in the podcast.
Yes, if only he heard what you cut out.
So he says, be careful of your powers. Because then I started to think about it a little bit more. I thought that the week before we had the old boat thing, and I said to you, now imagine if you wake up in the morning and it's cleared. And we gave Yuri Geller all the credit for that, right?
Yeah.
And then last week there was the whole Prince Philip incident. But also mixed into that, I seem to remember when you were eating your humble pie over the boat being moved, we were talking about the healing of the Royal Rift.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, of course, Harry's coming back, and maybe I'm going to be... I feel that I might be responsible now for healing the Rift. I think I've cleared the ship. I've had an unfortunate effect on a senior royal.
Yes.
And on a more positive note, I may well be responsible for healing the Rift. I think I've got this power suddenly.
Watch this space.
I've got to be very careful what I say.
Yeah. And I take that, you know, if anyone's listening to this, don't ever cross Trev, because you never know. He might turn on you.
The other thought I had about him not quite reaching the 100, bearing in mind that in life he was quite a forthright fella, I wouldn't want to be St. Peter at the gate when he arrived. Can you imagine the earful he's going to get? Because he would want to reach 100. I believe I read that he, years ago when he was asked, he didn't want to live to be old. But now that it was in sight, he was talking about, apparently he said, well, it's a landmark, I suppose. And now he hasn't reached that landmark. I'd imagine he's been giving them a right old earful up there.
I think you're right. That was actually one of the things I did enjoy hearing about him in all the coverage I listened to, was how he was the only person alive who could speak to the Queen the way he did. And there was a wonderful story about them going to some event or another, and him taking his seat and waiting for the Queen, and she ends up getting talking to someone, and of course Prince Philip, being Prince Philip, just sort of leans over and goes, "Oh, yakety bloody yak yak, can you hurry up, woman?" I thought that was amazing.
There's also a great one where he was waiting for some photograph to be taken, and there was a lot of faffing about. And he just, I don't know if he swore, but he basically said, "Get on with the fucking photograph." That. I mean, you don't want to upset him. So I've got a feeling that there's been a bit of a roasting going on up at the pearly gates, because he would be saying, "Come, I mean, 8 weeks is all I needed. 8 weeks is all I needed." But I quite enjoyed watching a couple of the tribute programs. It was quite interesting to see all those moments. You know, they were talking about some of his, shall we say, more blunt and maybe non-politically correct moments.
Yes.
And what I liked about it was everyone in the tributes program was sort of saying, well, it was all harmless fun, really.
But I mean, you get that. I think all families have that. You get that one relative who's reached a certain age.
Yeah.
And they say something that is just wildly inappropriate. And under normal circumstances, if it was your mate down the pub, you'd go, "Come on, mate, less of that. Come on, we can't be saying that now."
Yeah.
But when it's this relative, you just sort of go, "Oh, you know what? If they've got to this age and they're still talking bollocks, just leave them to it."
Yeah, yeah.
They're not for learning.
Yeah. And when it's the Queen's husband, it's like, he can do what he wants. Do you know what I mean? So it's a weird thing, though, isn't it? You know, when somebody, whether you're a royalist or not, when somebody has been there, he's been there your whole life as this person who's in this position, and then suddenly not. It's a weird thing. I found it quite disconcerting that there's a sort of a comfort of knowing that he was there. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like when Doc Cotton left EastEnders. You almost feel like, even though I didn't watch EastEnders anymore, there was a comfort in knowing that was always there. Doc Cotton was always at Albert Square. And then she left. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's something's not quite right with the world. And I can't quite get my head around it. It's a very odd thing.
It is odd, isn't it? I wonder how long it'll take us to sort of adjust to the royals. I by the way, speaking of new things, one thing I've learned this week is the word consort.
Consort, yes.
Yes, I've heard that a lot on the news, the longest serving consort. Yes. I don't really know what a consort is, if I'm being honest.
A consort is like the... So if you're married to the monarch,
yeah,
you are the consort.
Well, I never got my head around that as a kid when we had the Queen, and I thought, well, the Queen's husband, well, that's got to be the King, right?
No.
So I never really understood the idea of a consort, and now I know what the word is. Yeah, so that's good. Yeah. I've learned something this week.
Of course, Prince Albert was a consort to Victoria.
Right.
And there's that weird thing that obviously if you become King, your spouse will be Queen. But if it's the Queen, then the spouse becomes the consort. It's not King. There's a strange...
That seems a touch sexist, doesn't it?
Well, there's obviously some old-fashioned reason for that, I'd imagine. I don't know why.
Here's another thing, though. Am I imagining this, or did they say, the royals, that when eventually Charles becomes King, Camilla won't be the Queen?
Well, there's a lot of controversy about that. I believe, I might be wrong on this, but I believe... Because Charles divorced and then remarried, she can't become queen. Or there's something around the whole divorce thing that plays a part, I think, in that whole,
right,
that whole scenario.
Well, I find it difficult in a week of such newsworthiness to, you know, politely say I don't give a stuff about the royals, but I don't give a stuff about the royals.
Well, I tell you what's interesting is when you watch, well, I was watching a couple of these programs that go out, and there is something bizarre about some of the people they interview in these programs, sort of royal biographers. Oh. I think there's something bizarre about taking that level of interest, and they're always very kind of posh people as well, and they almost a bit too into it. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I sort of like the Royals to a degree. I'm not that fussed either way, but I think, as I said a few weeks ago, there are historic moments that I feel need to be marked, and the passing of Philip is a historic moment.
It certainly is.
And yeah, and you know, I think the Queen does a fine job, and I feel for her mourning the loss of her husband of 73 years. It's an incredible length of time to be with someone, and you know, I do feel for her. But yeah, I think those people that write all those books, I just don't believe that they can know all the things they talk about. You know, I mean, I was told on one occasion, and I think, oh, were you really who told you that?
Yeah, there's probably not a lot of verified stories out there. It's probably just a lot of made up rubbish, isn't it?
I do enjoy, though, is when they interview old relatives, distant sort of cousins and things. That level of poshness as well. I'll tell you what I realised about that level of posh.
Go on.
That you have to get to. Is they don't move their teeth. Perhaps I shouldn't have been noticing this at the time of a great historic moment, but it's all I could notice was the fact that none of them move their teeth when they talk. It's a very sort of tight voice, and actually it's the teeth that don't move, and I couldn't quite understand why that is.
You see, if you were so bored that you started noticing their teeth, then you've been watching too much coverage.
there was one lady, I don't know who she was, some relative, and she was very old herself. She was of that age where her trousers met her bra. Do you know what I mean? That sort of age.
Yeah.
And she had this hideous knitted sort of house on a shelf. I don't know why I was noticing that, but I did. But she was brilliant because she started talking about being very stoic and that the Royals are very stoic. And she said something like, and of course, when Diana died, we were all flabbergasted. You know, the country seemed to become hysterical. And it was just like, you don't understand emotion. I think there's that level where you don't move your teeth and you don't understand emotion. Anyway, God rest his soul.
Hear, hear. Trevor, I wanted to ask you, have you ever seen anyone do something a little bit strange or a little bit not done the conventional way, and you just sort of make a snap decision in that second that I wouldn't ever trust that person?
Yeah, I guess so. Tell me more.
Okay, well, here's an example. There are lots of reasons, I think, not to trust Donald Trump, for example.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
However, for me, the biggest red flag of the lot is the fact that he likes to eat pizza crust first.
Now,
I can't trust a man who eats his pizza crust first.
Well, I've got some news to tell you.
Oh, dear.
Because I often eat a pizza crust first.
What?
I know it's against convention because the crust is there as a sort of handy holding part of the pizza.
So you like to be left with just the good bit after you've done the labour of the crust?
Yeah, it's like, why be left with the crust? Because as you know, I don't like sauces, so I'm not one that will then dip the crust into the garlic sauce that arrives at the pizza.
Well, that's where I was going to go with it. You dip it into a sauce, obviously.
So, you know, I don't want the crust to be the final bit of the pizza eaten. What I tend to do, right, here's how I generally eat a pizza. I'm not saying every slice I'll go crust first.
Okay.
Certainly the final slice, if not the last few, I'll go crust first. But then I will also save the bits of pepperoni as the final bit of treat. So I'll peel them off, put them to one side, right? So eat the crust, then eat the rest of the slice, and then finish with the final few slices of pepperoni.
You see, I used to sort of eye up the pizza and identify what I thought was the best slice,
right,
and save that for last. But and I thought that was a bit odd, but what you're doing to pizza, God only knows.
I mean, I don't do this if I'm eating pizza with other people. This is generally how I eat pizza on my own.
I see. You know, well, that was a revelation to me that you're doing this as well. Because I was going to say, I've had pizza with you and you've not been doing anything weird with it.
Yeah. No, it's just something that it's how, you know, like some people, there are foods that you'll eat differently on your own to when you're with other people. Like spaghetti, right? When you're on your own. Oh, it's a mess, right? You'll be slurping it, it'll all be over your chin, slopping down your shirt front. Do you know what I mean? You're on your own, doesn't matter. If you're eating, well, I won't eat spaghetti now in the company of other people.
Really?
Yeah, because it's such a fucking nightmare, spaghetti. Like, who invented spaghetti? It's a fucking ludicrous food to be eating. I've never mastered the twirling it around the fork thing. I've tried that.
If you can't do that, then here's a little, so to take this advice, like, stabilizers on a bike.
Right.
Get a spoon.
No, I've tried it with a spoon. It doesn't work. I find that I get it onto it sort of twirls around the fork, all right? But then the moment you lift the fork to your mouth, half of it will slop off. And, I just got to the point where, because if I'm eating spaghetti, if I do eat spaghetti in the company of others, I'll eat it with a knife and fork and I'll chop it into very small bits.
Like a 2-year-old.
Yeah, and then use the fork almost like a spoon. You just sort of scoop up little bits of spaghetti. Because, I mean, it takes me fucking ages to eat a spaghetti meal. And if I'm out with you, you've had your dessert and coffee. I'm still on the spaghetti. So,
well,
yeah.
Okay. Well, the pizza example was just to sort of give you an idea of what I was talking about. But I've actually experienced something which I'm hoping, God, if you tell me you do this too, then I'll really panic.
Oh, it's not someone who eats custard creams by taking the top off, eating the top and then nibbling around the sides to leave just the cream and the final bit of biscuit. It's not that, is it? Because who would do that?
I mean, we've all done that once, haven't we? We've all tried it once.
Yeah, once. Yeah. Just the once. Yeah.
You do it every time, don't you? So I've noticed this guy whilst I'm at work, and I've seen this guy on more than one occasion, and he was doing this thing on both occasions. So I know it wasn't a weird one-off or something had gone wrong and he was trying to fix it. This was his preferred way of doing this. He was sat on a bench in the high street with a Subway.
Right.
You know, Subway, the quite all right, I think I quite like them, American-style Subway sandwiches.
Yeah.
This guy, he was eating it. He took it to the bench, sat down, had his drink on the floor next to him.
Right.
He sat down, he opened up his Subway, and he started picking out the tomatoes and eating the tomatoes.
Right, okay.
Then he'd pick out some of the ham and eat the ham. Then he'd go back in, take some of the cucumber, then eat the cucumber. Then he might have a bit of a pick at the old sweet corn, maybe a bit of red onion. Then he got up, walked to the bin, and got rid of the bread.
That is weird.
I wouldn't let that man around hot equipment, let alone children. This man, in my honest to God opinion, should be locked up somewhere for this. I've seen him do it twice.
It's a very strange thing because with a Subway, part of the whole experience is the bread, isn't it?
Well, not to mention, Subway also sells salads where you can choose what you want in a plastic bowl.
Well, that would be the better option for him, wouldn't it? Perhaps he just thinks the bread's like a bit of packaging.
I'll tell you what, though. There was a bit of really uncomfortable eye contact because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it was like a car crash. I just couldn't not look.
Yeah.
But what are you doing, man? And then he clocked me clocking him. And he had this sort of knowing shame about himself, I think. But he was doing it very brazenly in public, and I didn't like this. If this was my thing, I'd do it behind closed doors, I think.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes, though, it's just habit, isn't it? You know, it's like if that's how he eats a sandwich at home, if he's just out, and again, he thinks he's on his own, and he's just on a park bench, it's like, I'll just eat it as I would at home. It's odd. I'll give you that. It's not the norm, but I'm a man who eats pizzas crust first. So I'm all open for ideas, but it does to waste the bread annoys me.
Well, like you say, maybe he's just not familiar with the concept of bread. I find that hard to believe. Or maybe he's like you say, he thinks it's some sort of conduit for the rest of the ingredients. And he thinks he's like some sort of miner getting his Cornish pasty.
Yeah.
And all the pastry's there for is a container to protect your dirty fingers from the food. And you just sort of open it up and gobble double the insides.
But the thing about a Subway is you get a choice of bread. So presumably he's making a conscious decision about the type of bread that he wants.
Yeah, I'd like the hearty Italian plate, please.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a very odd thing, isn't it? To think, well, I'll choose the bread that I... Unless he just goes in and just goes, the bread doesn't matter. I just want... You've got to question the people behind the counter as well, because why don't they just say... have a salad.
Well, because they don't see him eating it.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
He's eating it on a bench outside in the high street.
Well,
and believe it or not, I've actually been into a Subway before, not the same Subway, not my local one, but I've been into a Subway before and they said, I'm sorry, sir, we've run out of bread. How can Subway run out of bread at 3 in the afternoon? And if I thought that I couldn't get my lunch because some moron is using his bread like a plate, it would just... So I just can't ever trust that man. I'll remember his face. I'll never trust him. Is there anything weird that people do that you've seen, or just attitudes or little beliefs you have that if someone does something a bit weird, they're in the non-trustworthy book?
Well, I don't know about things people do. I mean, I suppose there are. A lot of these things were from when I was younger. I think as I've got older, I've become more tolerant of people's foibles and quirks. But when I was younger, I tell you what, I went through a phase of never trust anyone wearing a bow tie.
Is there any exception for that? Formal occasions, surely.
Formal occasions, I suppose, and magicians.
Yes.
Fine. But when I was a kid, the doctor that I used to have to see always wore a bow tie and I didn't like him. So I think I had this connection with bow tie, doctor I don't like. So that just really tarnished my view of the bow tie.
Wow. Okay.
So I think I've grown out of that. I mean, other things that, again, it's something I've become, it doesn't bother me now, but there was a time when I probably could never trust anyone who didn't like football. But that, again, as a young man, I couldn't understand that. How can someone not like football? That seems weird to me. But as I've got older, of course, you think, well, because you probably saw all the bullshit about football that I hadn't seen yet. I hadn't chosen to pick up on that. I was just there for the joy and the fun and the boisterousness of it. And I didn't see the people rolling about wasting time, the prima donnas. And, so yeah, there was those sorts of things. Not being able to converse with anyone who I didn't agree with politically. They were sort of off my list. But as I got older, it's like, we're all different. We might not agree on that, but there's so much more to a friendship than just that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say it's a very positive sign that you have grown out of your ability to write somebody off very quickly, which I apparently am adapting and enhancing. Although I'm not sure you've entirely mastered the politics one yet, because
no.
I do remember one day, and I won't name them, but one of the higher ups at the radio station we used to work at, for absolutely no reason at all, just decided to speak up one day and said, Oh, Ben, I bet you're a lefty and Trev's obviously a Tory.
Yeah.
And your face.
Yeah.
I got nervous. I mean, it was a small room. I thought you were going to go on a rampage.
Yeah. Well, that was someone making an assumption about me. I don't like that. Don't make an assumption about me. You don't ask me. But what basis have you got for that argument as well? There was no basis on anything we'd ever spoken about with this person before that would give him that view.
And I don't think we'd said anything either. I think we were just sitting quietly working.
Yeah.
And there was just this proclamation that you're a Tory.
I tell you the other thing, when I was, again, a bit younger, I probably still suffer this a little bit with people. See, if I start a new workplace, I tend to be quite quiet for some time. It takes me a little while. I just kind of sit back. I get to know people, get to know the lay of the land before I think, I can make a certain type of joke or I can be a certain way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've always found it very difficult with people that come in to a place where I've been working for a long time, and they come in with just full confidence, because I immediately see that as arrogance, and I don't like it. You know, a few times I've found myself really wrong about people, like really wrong about people, because I've made a snap judgment on the there's someone that I, again, I'm not going to mention that because I'm really good friends with them now, and I think it'd be really unfair if they found this out, right? But there's someone who's a really good friend of mine, but the first time I ever came across this person, just because their voice reminded me of someone I didn't like, I didn't like this person.
Okay.
So there was like a moment where I was talking to another friend of mine going, because this person had been shown round as they'd come for a job interview. And I was talking to another friend. I hope she don't get the job. I mean, it's just she reminds me of the other person. I can't bear that. And this person proved to be the nicest, most brilliant person to work with. But, you know, I made some ridiculous snap judgment based on a voice.
Oh, it's at least big of you to sort of say how wrong you were. I wonder, how famous is the person she sounded like?
Oh, not famous at all. It was just someone I used to work with who was...
Oh, okay.
Just reminded me of someone who was just horrible to work with. Like, she would have these massive strops at people. She'd be shouting at people. Like, she even... Not like knock someone out, but she punched another radio presenter in the arm one day, and it's like, well, come on, calm down, people. You know?
Oh dear.
And because there were similarities in the sound of voice, I'd made this snap decision. Very wrong of me. Very wrong.
Well, at least you're the big enough man to admit your mistake.
Yeah, no, I will always do that. I'll always say when I'm wrong about people, because you know, it was a big lesson learned not to make snap judgments, because I think I always used to do that. And I tell you, the other thing I used to do is I would base on other people's opinion of people as to whether I like them. So again, as another friend of mine, very good friend now, right? But when he started working in the company I was working at, I didn't like him because another one of my friends didn't like him because on one occasion she thought he'd been a little bit rude. And then we ended up going for a drink one day and we got on like a house on fire. And we've been one of, you know, best mates ever since.
I must admit, I think I'm guilty of that, because usually if you tell me you think someone's a dick before I've met them, I tend to go in thinking, yeah, well, they're probably a dick then.
Yeah, and normally they are. I've got a question for you then, Ben.
Go ahead.
Are there things that at your age you think you should know how to do, or things you should know?
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah. And in fact, I think lockdown has highlighted various things as well.
Right, okay. Like what?
Well, we've been doing a lot of quizzes on certain nights of the week with friends.
Oh, yeah.
And I find it awfully tedious now, because there's always a question without fail about what flag is this to this country, or what's this outline of this country. And it just highlighted that unless the highlighted country is the UK or Italy, I don't know it. And I have a very small sphere of flags that I know. And it just makes me feel stupid every single week. The other thing, I've just really highlighted in recent days how terrible I am at DIY.
Right, yeah.
Fixing anything, even knowing the bits. I've been looking for a replacement part for a dishwasher, and I don't even know what the part's called. And I can't find it, so now I'm stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the dishwasher out of commission. I couldn't honestly tell... Not only could I not now tell you how to wire a plug, I couldn't even tell you the colours of the wires in the plug before I opened it.
Really?
I know there's a brown one.
Yeah.
I think there's a yellow and green one that's wrapped around each other.
That's right.
And is there a blue one? Or is it yellow? I don't know.
There's a blue one.
It is blue, is it?
It's a blue one. So I do know that, because I had to do that at college, right? So
okay. Yeah. I wouldn't know which was the live. I wouldn't know which was the earth.
Brown
is
live.
I don't know what the third one does.
Brown is live. The yellow and green one's earth, and the blue one's neutral.
That's great. I don't know why you need a neutral one. Don't know what that means. And I promise you, by the end of this podcast, I will have forgotten exactly what you've just told me.
Well, that's just something from my college days. I've rarely had to wire a plug, but that's just always stuck. But the reason I've been thinking about this week is because me and my mate from school, right? We're same ages, or I'm about six months older than him. And we both like to think that we're fairly intelligent human beings.
Okay.
But sometimes there are things in our lives that we just fuck up, right? So I got a message from him this week. He'd bought himself a brand new lawnmower. And I got a message from this guy. I think I fucked up my new lawnmower already, because it's a petrol lawnmower and he'd put oil in to where the petrol should go.
Okay. That doesn't sound... That only sounds bad if he then tried to start it.
Which he did, and of course then it didn't go.
Fucked, yeah.
So it's fine. I spoke to people who might... Because I don't know. I don't know what would be wrong with that. That's something I've no idea about. Engines and that sort of thing. Like, I opened my car bonnet occasionally. I don't know what the fuck I'm looking at. So anyway, my mate was saying, I'm 43 years old and I don't know this stuff. And I thought, do you know what? There's so many things in life that I thought, I'm 43 that I don't know. And so here are some of the things that came to mind that I think I should know how to do by 43.
Oh, well, this will be interesting, because obviously I'm a little bit younger than you, so it'll be interesting to see how many of these I can do. I don't think there'll be very many.
Okay. Use a compass properly and map read.
No. The coordinates of the sky have always greatly confused me.
No idea. Even at school, I think we did it a little bit more at Cubs. Never understood that. If it weren't for sat-nav, I'd never get anywhere.
Oh, completely.
And I've got a member of my family who just refuses to have a sat-nav. And he thinks people with sat-navs have given in to technology and people should know how to map read and be able to navigate without a sat-nav. I'd be fucked without it. I'm very happy with a sat-nav, but there's a bit of me that thinks maybe I should have learned how to use a compass and a map properly.
No, I'm going to say that person's wrong, because I don't know in how many occasions you would ever phone up, say, a job interview place and say, oh, I can't find you. My sat-nav's packed up. I'm really sorry. Can you help at all?
Yeah.
And then the employer on the other end is going to go, oh, yes, find the North Star, walk 3 miles due east. And they're not going to do that, are they?
No. I was once very lost. I don't mean to name drop.
Go on.
But I was going to record an interview with Susan Boyle. Right. I wasn't doing the interview. I was just the engineer, the technician.
Oh, right. Okay.
So the person doing the interview, she got... This was all at the property of QVC, the shopping channel.
No.
Because Susan Boyle had been there promoting her album, and they'd said to us, come there and do the interview in the dressing room there.
What, they were going to flog her album on QVC, the shopping channel?
She was on there doing a special for her album, right? So I said to the presenter, I said, well, look, I'm going to drive because I need to bring all the equipment. So got in the car, got the sat-nav. I knew it was sort of in the Chiswick area. But I got where I thought it was going to be. And I just, the sat-nav just went fucking mental, though. I couldn't find this place. I kept going round and round the same fucking roads. I lost the plot at one point. I was going down the same road for about the sixth time. I was at the traffic lights. Time's running out. And I just was banging the steering wheel going, for fucking hell. And then I realised that my window was down and I was at a bus stop and there was a lot of very young school children with their mums at the bus stop. So that brought me down to earth a little bit. And I ended up having to speak to this the security guard at QVC. And he said, oh, what you need to do is you need to go round the roundabout, which I'd been round more times than I cared to remember. And he said, but what you need to do is you need to come off at the exit that's for some tube station. And we're down there. And it turned out that this QVC place was in a brand new built estate that wasn't on my sat-nav was out of date.
Yeah, I was going to say you haven't updated your map.
But then even if that, I wouldn't have had an up-to-date map in the car, even if I was map reading. So I still would have been lost.
That's an excellent point. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. So I don't know why I'm giving myself a hard time over it.
No.
Right. So compass reading, one thing. Here's another thing that I feel I should know. Doing a barbecue properly. Getting the barbecue lit I'm always having to fan the thing to get it going, and then it goes too much, and I'm having to put a bit of water on it to douse it down.
What are you putting water on your barbecue to get it going for, you fool?
No, no, not with it. Just because once it's got going, it's almost going too much, so then I have to put water on it. And none of my friends can do it. They all say they can, but they can't. I've never met anyone that can really do it that well. I think possibly one person in my life I've met who can do a barbecue well. Everyone else is just fucking, you know, making it up as they go along. I remember one person saying to me, oh no, the best thing to do is get it going, but then douse it down with beer. And I'm thinking, well, what? You should, surely this should come up, but you don't have to douse it. That you should be able to build a barbecue to such a good degree that you don't have to be dousing it at any point.
Right. Well, can I suggest to you,
if you mention a gas barbecue, we're going to fall out.
No, no, no. I wasn't going to make, well, obviously a gas barbecue is a way to go.
Yeah.
If you want to go charcoal briquettes, you want to get the coals going in like a barbecue chimney thing.
Right.
And then when they're all hot in there, you can dump them in.
Right.
And then I'm going to get really boring now, but you've entered my domain here. You want to consider two zone cooking.
Right.
So you want to have a lot of coals in one part of the barbecue,
yeah,
and much fewer on the other side. So you've got that really hot side for searing meat.
Right.
And then just shift over to the not so hot side for two zone cooking.
That's a very good idea. What I will say is my barbecue food is always very, very well cooked. It's the whole getting it going thing is the problem. And my secret to getting the food really nice is the food should never stop moving. And that might be because I haven't built the barbecue properly. But I find if you're always moving the food about, you move a sausage, a burger, a sausage burger, you move it just on a constant move, then they cook brilliantly.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of effort to go to, and I just think at 43, I should have learned a better way. I'll just give you a couple more.
Are you sure? I mean, I could sit here and talk about barbecue for quite a long time if you want.
I think we've done the barbecue thing.
Fine.
Okay, here's another thing that perhaps I should know at 43. Sewing. Like, just a simple thing like sewing a button on.
Now, why?
Well, because if a button comes off a shirt, I just think, well, the shirt will do without that button. That's not a way to live, is it? You're given spare buttons when you buy a shirt for the very occasion a button falls off. But I'm just like, well, the shirt can survive without that button. I don't sew anything. Like darning a sock, I just think, well, I'll wear a sock with holes in until they're so big that I just can't justify them anymore, and I'll buy some new ones.
Oh, I would never, this might make me, you know, frivolous or whatever, but I would never even consider fixing a sock. That's just in the bin.
Right.
Or like you wear it until it becomes just unfit for purpose entirely, but yeah.
But what about a shirt
with sewing? To me, with a button,
yeah.
I would ask, not because it's a sexist thing to do, I would ask Mrs. Ben to do it because I find the process of attempting to thread a needle, I would rather take that same needle and thrust it into my eyeball than try and thread it, because it's so, I'm quite a clumsy person anyway.
Yeah, and impatient.
The idea of me attempting to do something as precision-based as threading a needle, nah.
Right, so the whole reason you don't do it is just the whole thing of threading the needle. That's your reason for
it. I reckon what, if you gave me the needle threaded with a bit of string on it, is it string? I don't
know. Cotton?
I don't know. I reckon I could probably get a button back on just about.
Do you reckon?
Probably. It's, how hard can it be? There's four holes in a button, just sort of crisscross.
Yeah, no, that's what I've done in the past. You think, oh, this is easy. But yeah. then it's like, how do you actually, like, what's the final bit of the sewing on a button? Like, you do the crisscross and you think that's fine, but then how do you finish it off? Because I think, well, that's done, I'll cut that off now. Within a couple of days it's fallen off because I've not secured it. I've just put cotton through the holes. That's all I've done. There's been no securing of the button.
The securing bit needs to be done on the back of the shirt, which can't be seen. So a bit of sellotape will do that nicely.
A bit of gaffer.
Yeah.
Right, okay. thanks for that. And finally, right, here's the thing that I don't know how to do at 43, and it's not something I use very often, but I've never mastered aftershave.
No?
What is the correct amount of aftershave to put on? I always find that I either put on, because I don't want to be that person where everyone goes, fucking hell, he's overdone the aftershave,
yeah,
which I have been in the past, I'm sure. So then I put a little bit on, just a little, and you think, is it worth it? What is the point of this? I don't know. I don't use aftershave very often, but I've never mastered it. And I always think at 43, I should have mastered the aftershave ointment.
Okay, what I do, and I'm not sure if this is right, but it seems to work. I give one to maybe two spritzes of aftershave onto my left wrist.
Right.
Then I rub my wrists together.
Oh, no offence, mate, but it's such a girly way of doing it. Do you put a little bit into the air and walk into it as well?
strut through it, yeah. And then you take your wrists and then you rub just below your ears, right, around where your pulse is taken on your throat. And that'll do you.
Yeah. I don't think you've mastered aftershave either.
I've mastered perfume.
Before we finish up this week, Ben, I just want to share with you an email I received this week.
Okay.
I know I've shared emails with you before when opportunities have been presented to me, but this one I think is a very special email.
Right.
The subject says, "Your attention needed." It's from somebody called Jones Williams. It says, "Dear friend, am Jones Williams." Not I am, just am.
Yeah.
Am Jones Williams, a British citizen and a banker here in the UK. So he's here in the UK, but he's not bothered to master the full English language by telling I am.
I like it as well how he's got a first name for a surname and a surname for a first name.
Yeah. He says, "Please, I'm very sorry for disturbing you, but if you don't mind, bolt of us. So this must be an official letter, mustn't it?
Oh, yes.
So if you don't mind, bolt of us will rejoice and celebrate together at the end of the day. So already, I've got to read on, right?
Oh, of course.
I have a deal of $25.3 million to rock with you.
Okay.
This money in question belong to one of our customers who died on March 2020. Just on March 2020, not on a specific date, just on March. On a complicated issue related to coronavirus, COVID-19.
COVID.
So he's well up with the pandemic.
Now, was that just criminal incompetence, or was that a cheeky little wink at the fact this is such a scam that he's called it COVID?
COVID. So the customer deposited the money with our bank without any next of kin, and I am the account manager of late customer. The deal is complete, 100% risk-free. The truth of the matter is that the money in question does not belong to me, rather to our late customer who died on coronavirus, COVID-19.
I got it right that time.
Yeah, but he died on coronavirus, not with or of it.
On March, yeah. I remember.
On it, on March. I need a trustworthy person outside UK. When I'm in the UK, so it's not... I think you might have the wrong person here. I'm trustworthy, but I am in the UK.
Yeah, I need someone trustworthy, which is why I've emailed a complete stranger.
Yeah, I need someone outside the UK who will help me to receive the money on bank safe seal trunk boxes. I don't know what bank safe seal trunk boxes are, but I like the sound of them.
And did he say outside the UK?
Outside the UK, yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah. So he needs help to avoid traces, and we are going to share the money 50-50 because I don't want to be greedy. Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah. It seems completely legit and above board, you know, this traceless system they want to set up. Yeah.
If you're interested in this deal, kindly send down the following personal details demanded of you below. Demanded of me, not required or asked. Demanded.
God, it's taking quite an aggressive turn, isn't it?
And as soon
not
as
quite
I,
friendly until then.
And as soon as I hear from you with the required information below, we will proceed on how the money will move to you in your country. But you are advised to keep everything in regards to this business very confidential, only between me and you to ensure successful conclusion.
Mm.
So he wants my full name, my occupation, age and sex, marital status, private mobile phone and fax numbers, and my current residential address. Says, I'm waiting for your urgent response so that we will start immediately. So we will start immediately on how the fund will move to you in your country through United Nations delivery agent. Please confirm the receipt of this vital message. Regards, yours faithfully, Jones Williams." Money in the bank, innit?
Yeah, this is gold, mate, gold.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. I've got a couple of recommendations of things before we go, Ben.
What have we got?
One's a TV show I've started watching called The Flight Attendant.
Oh, has that got Kaylee Cuoco in it?
I think so.
I don't know how to pronounce her name properly. Was I close?
I don't know her name.
Kaylee Cuoco.
Let me just look her up. Flight Attendant. Yes, Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm not alone.
Yeah, so anyway, she's in it. I'm 3 episodes in now. It's weird, but it's really good.
I've seen the trailer for it, and it does look very intriguing. I might give that a go.
Yeah, it's quite trippy at times, because she's sort of coming in and out of her own imagination. It's very trippy, but yeah, enjoying that. And I want to recommend a couple of other podcasts. I've come very late to the party on both of these, I think. One's called Distraction Pieces. It's hosted by Scroobius Pip, and it's just another interview podcast. It talks to famous people about their life and films or books, whatever they're doing, but it's just a great listen.
Okay, I'll give that a go.
And there's a couple of really good ones. Really enjoyed the Carl Pilkington one, really enjoyed the Stephen Merchant one, and I've also listened to the Joe Cornish one. These are all quite old now, but well worth a listen. And I'll tell you the other podcast, which I've only just discovered through the Scroobius Pip one. It's called Brian Gittins and Friends.
Okay.
Now, Brian Gittins is the character played by David Earle in Ricky Gervais's Afterlife.
Right.
And he does this podcast where, again, he'll get other people in. There's one I've listened to with Adam Buxton. He's got another sidekick. I think his name's Dave Edwards, who's another comedian. It's quite bizarre, but very funny.
Okay.
And well worth a listen. So there's a couple of there. And I also heard of another podcast, which I think you would like, Ben. I'm not sure it's my cup of tea, but I only heard about it this morning. Did you know that there's an MMA fan podcast hosted by Blake Harrison?
I did not know that, no.
And I just thought, you're into your MMA and stuff.
Might Blake Harrison is in Neil from The Inbetweeners?
Yes, he's a big fan.
Oh, okay.
And from what I understand is he'll get celebs on and people that weren't into MMA, and then they'll get them to watch a certain fight, and then they'll discuss that. I think that's the general idea, as well as all the other fan stuff. But I thought that would be right up your street.
Lovely.
So there we are, a few things to watch and listen to. And thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.